There's an ancient story about two women who were brought before King Solomon because they were fighting over an infant, each woman insisting that the child was hers. Solomon took the child and said he would cut the baby in half so that each woman could have a part. One woman said nothing, but the other one said, "Don't kill the child. Give it to her. She's the mother." Solomon, of course, gave the child to the woman who had spoken. He assumed that the real mother would put the child's life first. And then there's another story about Abraham, in which he's instructed by God to sacrifice his only son, Isaac. Abraham takes the child into the wilderness and is about to kill him when God intervenes and tells him to spare the boy. It's clear, however, that Abraham's first commitment is to demonstrate his faith, and that to prove his obedience, he would have gone ahead with the sacrifice. The woman in the first story relinquishes truth in order to save the life of her child. Abraham, in the second story, is prepared to relinquish his child's life to prove his faith, to demonstrate a principle. As liberal religious people, we often make a great point of our commitment to truth and to universal principles of justice. And we are supported by our leading psychological theorists, such as Freud, Piaget, Erickson, and Kohlberg, in our belief that the very highest stages of adult moral development involve the ability to apply universal principles without being confused by circumstances. But I would suggest to you that there may be something very important missing from this view of morality. For all of our major developmental theorists, male development is equated with human development. When girls or women do not fit into the developmental categories or stages, it is assumed that they have failed to develop adequately. Until recently, it has not been assumed that the theories might be inadequate. In Freud's view, the development of a conscience depends upon a little boy's ability to give up his desire for his mother and identify with his powerful father, so as not to be castrated. For boys, their very identity as males, as well as the beginning of conscience, depends upon this resolution. They must separate themselves from their first attachment to mother and perceive themselves as different in order to identify with the father. Now, Freud could not easily fit females into this theory. Without castration anxiety and without the need to separate from mother in order to identify with the parent of the same sex, girls were considered to be, by nature, incapable of developing an adequate conscience. Freud concluded that women show less sense of justice than men and that they are more often influenced in their judgments by feelings. Notice that what was a problem in theory was translated into a problem in women's development. What we need to notice here is that women are almost universally responsible for early child care. Thus, boys, in order to define themselves as masculine, have to experience separation from that early caretaker, usually the mother. Girls, however, define themselves as female by experiencing an ongoing attachment to the mother or caretaker. When male theorists define developmental stages in terms of increasing separation, women's failure to separate becomes, by definition, a failure to develop. A similar problem appears in Kohlberg's theory of moral development. On the basis of a longitudinal study of 84 boys whose development was followed for over 20 years, Kohlberg defines 6 stages of moral development. Although the stages are proposed as universal, women rarely score higher than stage 3. At this stage, morality is understood in interpersonal terms, and goodness is equated with helping and pleasing others. Kohlberg suggests that this level of development is adequate for women who stay at home, And only if women enter male occupations will they begin to see the inadequacy of this perspective and progress like men to the higher stages, where relationships are subordinated to rules, stage 4, and then rules are subordinated to universal principles of justice in stages 5 and 6. In this theoretical framework, caring or being sensitive to the needs of others marks a person as deficient in moral development. Carol Gilligan suggests that if we were to study women and to derive developmental constructs from their lives, a very different set of moral stages might emerge. Moral development might be defined as a growing understanding of relationships and responsibility. At present, male theory defines moral development as the understanding of rights and abstract principles. On the basis of research with girls and women, Gilligan outlines 3 stages of moral development, which are based upon the female experience of growing up within a web or network of relationships and the responsibilities inherent in those attachments. The first is a stage when good is equated with one's own survival and well-being, with little awareness of the needs of others. Within the context of attachments, this stance is eventually criticized as selfish, and a second stage is initiated in which good is equated with taking responsibility for meeting the needs of others, caring for them, pleasing them, a kind of maternal morality. Eventually, the excluding of oneself from the circle of care creates resentment and problems in relationships and gives rise to the third and highest stage of moral development. In this third stage, there is the realization that it is necessary to include oneself among those who are deserving of care and love, an awareness that adult life demands an ethic of interdependence and shared responsibility. In Gilligan's words, care becomes the self-chosen principle of a judgment that remains psychological in its concern with relationships and response, but becomes universal in its condemnation of exploitation and hurt. Thus, a progressively more adequate understanding of the psychology of human relationships, an increasing differentiation of self and other, and a growing comprehension of the dynamics of social interaction informs the development of an ethic of care. It is this final step that many women have been taking in recent years, leaving behind an ethic of self-sacrifice and moving into an ethic that affirms the self and others. The experiences of our earliest childhood push us to develop along different paths as men and women seeking to define what is of value in life. Unfortunately, only one of those paths has been taken seriously. But we need both. Each path has its pitfalls, its extremes, and needs the corrective balance of the other. The chief pitfall of the male morality is arrogance, insensitivity, and the loss of satisfying relationships. We can become so devoted to our principles that we fail to see what we are actually doing in relation to others. We become as Abraham, willing to sacrifice a beloved child to prove a principle. In our drive toward increasing separation and autonomy, we may find ourselves not only alone, but at war with everyone. The chief pitfall of the female morality is martyrdom, the loss of self and of the capacity to live fully in our drive to care for others. We can become so attuned to others' needs that we become boring, failing to develop our own talents. We become as the mother before Solomon, risking unbearable hurt to ourselves in order to save another. In our drive to hold on to attachments at any cost, we may destroy ourselves as individuals. Jesus called people to an ethic of caring which indicates that it is not always a female position. He showed repeatedly that he considered the needs of people more important than the rules, healing on the Sabbath, conversing with women in public, eating with known sinners, and suggesting that we give aid to strangers. But he also left us with a model of total self-sacrifice, which has outweighed his teachings and has allowed the church to distort his ethic and to render it impossible of accomplishment. As Mary Daly has said, women are expected to live out the ethic of self-sacrifice, and men are expected to give lip service to it. The pursuit of self-sacrifice, like the pursuit of self-righteousness, is unhealthy. Real caring for ourselves and others is too often lost somewhere between the realms of sacrifice and of arrogance. The moral questions that confront us today will not be solved by a sick swinging back and forth between arrogant self-righteousness and helpless martyrdom. That is an ethic that deserves to die. A good many years ago, I attended a large ecumenical service designed to express concern over some terrible events in El Salvador. It was inspiring to see people of varied backgrounds sharing in such a service, but the ethic it attempted to convey seemed to me to be profoundly unhealthy. A dramatic troop acted out the shooting of a courageous bishop, and then one after another, the troop members ascended his pulpit and were gunned down, and finally all of us were invited to join in this ethic of martyrdom, to take up his task and be shot down. No thanks, I said to myself. We have traveled dangerously far down the road of arrogant, missile-wielding self-righteousness, and not one of our many martyrs has been able to save us from the brink of destruction. We need a new ethic. Sensitive women and men need to assert our connectedness, our responsibility for each other and the earth, not out of an abstract sense of duty, but because in a very real sense, we are each other and we are the earth. Could it be that little girls who have been saying all along that they don't like to play games where people win and lose, that little girls are the key to an ethic of the future? As we look at our personal lives and at the larger society, as we look at our world, what kinds of moral questions arise? What is the basis for the personal moral decisions you make? What is the basis for the moral decisions made in this congregation? What is the basis for the moral decisions made by our government? What is your vision for a morality of the future? All of us have accepted the idea that the male view of morality is the only one. We need to expand our moral horizons so that love and justice are no longer split off from each other, but are interwoven themes for exploring the moral possibilities of life.